Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Happy Tuesday morning, everybody. So you've all been asking me since I just chatted about it earlier, how to get a China e-channel pass as a foreigner. And it is definitely awesome. I have it and it's working. So if you want to learn more about what that is and how you can get it, I've made a pretty good blog post how-to guide for China e-channel at globalfromasia.com/China e-channel, no dashes or anything. And you can learn how to apply for one yourself. So just basically don't even wait in line and just go right through in and out of China border. It's amazing. So the trade show season is coming up quick. And I felt like April just finished with the spring edition. October is coming so fast and there's going to be more and more activities than ever. It seems like it's just crazy now with trade shows and all these other events. I'm going to be definitely a busy bee going to the DC BKK event in Bangkok kind of before the trade shows start. I'm also going to help co-host a DCX in Hong Kong, the first of its kind. I'm going to be part of the enterchina.co meetup in Guangzhou. And of course, there's the Smart China Sourcing Summit, which we're going to talk about in today's show. We have the second Smart China Sourcing Summit hosted by the Global Sources team. And we have with us Pete Zaff, a friend of mine and behind one of the main guys behind this amazing summit. And today's show is his third time back on this show. So it's a record for him and for me, but he always is a very popular guest and he's going to give us some really good advanced or kind of like middle level strategies about switching factories or price negotiations. Because I know there's tons of content online about how to find a factory, how to go to trade shows. We've done stuff like that too. But this is actually more when you're already doing business with the factory and then they later come on and start maybe saying that material costs or labor costs or currencies have changed and prices are going up, or you just kind of want to change the factory. So he gives you some insights and strategies from what he's heard and witnessed over the years at Global Sources. And I know you're going to like this one. So definitely bookmark it. Maybe listen to it a couple of times. He's also been on earlier shows. If you want to hear him at episode 79, talking about China trade shows, and episode 111, talking about the evolution of Amazon FBA and how it's changed the game for China sourcing. So this one is number 138, globalfromasia.com/episode138, talking about switching factories, price negotiations, and more. After the show, we're going to talk about some of the events and the Smart China Sourcing Summit, where I'll be also presenting again, and I'm excited to be there. But let's, without further ado, get into today's meat and potatoes. Okay, thank you everybody for tuning in to another Global from Asia podcast. We have with us Peter Zaff from Global Sources. Thanks for coming on, Pete.
Well, thanks for having me on, Mike. Always exciting.
Yeah, I'm happy to have you. And it's the third time on the show. So if those that are interested to listen to some of his previous shows, he's on episode 79 and episode 111. Always sharing really great things about Amazon and sourcing from China and trade shows. So thanks again for sharing, Pete.
Oh, my pleasure.
So today's topic, we were talking a little bit about it before the recording here, is a little bit of a, you know, a little bit more of a medium level or advanced level topic, because this is for people that maybe already have been buying from factories and they're feeling like maybe their price isn't as competitive as maybe the competition, or maybe they're having not the best relationships or with the factory. So we're going to see how maybe bargaining some prices or maybe even switching factories. So I think the first point is picking on price alone, I guess that's never a good strategy. But sometimes what I've heard listeners and friends tell me is maybe they already have a price and they can figure out or even hear or see that their competitors are getting a better price. When do you think price should maybe come up with the supplier or...
Yeah, no, I think, you know, prices comes up pretty early in the process, right? But let me first give a little bit of background. Why I know a little bit, not a lot about this topic, but I've been with Global Sources for over 15 years. And at Global Sources, we run the globalsources.com site, you know, to help buyers find suppliers, our trade shows. And then as you mentioned, we were also doing some stuff for Amazon sellers. We're running a summit in conjunction with one of our trade shows, a conference for Amazon and online sellers. But over the years, and especially at our trade shows, I've often tried to sit down with some of the retailers that visit the shows, you know, for an hour for lunch and just pick their brains. So as a result, I've heard what at least some people do in price bargaining and factory switching, and I'll share a bit of what I've learned.
Yeah, thanks for that. I know, because sometimes a lot of times those that know how to do it don't want to share or you know, or even afraid to put it out there. So it's a very valuable discussion today.
Yeah.
And I'm sure listeners will get a lot.
So you said, you know, when does price come up? I think, you know, in both online, when you're inquiring to a supplier, and at the trade show, you know, a lot of people bring price up, you know, right at the beginning. What's the price? What's the FOB price? And that's okay. But I think the direction that you were going also was you do need to balance price with quality. I mean, I've heard a lot of stories about people getting a great price. Like I was talking to some folks that had found some suppliers, and they said, we got a really great price, but we've got a problem. When we do our product inspections, we can't get them below a 5% defect rate. You know, that may be a case where they were focusing so much on price that they didn't balance that with quality, and that'll cause problems down the road.
Yep, exactly. And I've done my share of sourcing and e-commerce over the years, and factories could always go lower if you push them. I remember even at the show bringing some samples with me, and I was kind of sometimes pushing price down, and they said, sure, we can keep cheapening the product, you know, if you want us to, you know. So I think you got to be also careful to know your product and the real costs. And there's, you know, of course, hard costs like material and labor that, you know, no factory really can cut, or they're going to make cheaper labor, which is, you know, the quality, or lower priced material, which will cheapen the product.
Hey, you're jumping into kind of the two ways that I've heard to figure out what let's call it a fair price for a product should be. And you're jumping straight into the more complicated one, which is,
okay.
No, but it's exactly what you said. It's if you know the bill of materials for the product, which, you know, the Amazon sellers tend not to know that, but the crowdfunding guys tend to know that. If you have the bill of materials, which is all the components that go into your product, you know, you can get pricing for each of the components and then figure out just what the component cost is. Then you can figure out how much labor time it takes to assemble those components and add a labor cost. Then you need to add some markup for factory overhead. And from that, you can bottom up build, you know, what would be or what could be a fair cost. So that's one way to figure out pricing.
Sure. Yeah, BOM is a good keyword. A lot of people don't know that, but yeah, like you said, it's the bill of materials. So you know, I think a lot of times people have to take more responsibility of their product and own, quote unquote, own it, you know, like really know what it's inside and what it takes to make it, rather than kind of like delegating that to the factory, because yeah, you'll have these problems later.
Well, and especially since, you know, as the importer of record, you're going to be legally responsible for anything about that product. So like you said, it's super valuable to really understand the inner components of that. Plus you're going to be the one that deals with returns because of defects or whatever. But anyway, that's the bottom up way. And that's one way that we've seen. Then the other way, which is what more of the Amazon sellers do. But even when we talk to Walmart, this is what Walmart says they do. We go get multiple quotes and then we go play them off against each other. Now, when the retailers are getting quotes, they tend to get quotes not just for the product itself, but the product, say, at this level of quality or with these specific requirements that will meet our regulatory compliance requirements and our quality requirements. So the retailers tend to provide a lot more information about what they need the product to do or to meet. And that can be done as a QC checklist, for example. But anyway, getting the multiple quotes, and then you can start playing the suppliers off against each other. Hey, I really, really like you, but your price just isn't competitive with the other suppliers. What can we do about that?
That's true. I like that. I'm a little bit honestly weaker at negotiation, and there's definitely some experts out there and people can learn just even basic negotiation, you know, in a normal business anywhere in the world. So one thing I've seen a lot of times people asking in WeChat groups and all these Facebook groups is, you know, when should they, is asking the price better on like on globalsources.com, do you think, or is it better when they come out to the trade show? And is there, or do you think, I guess it kind of could always depend, but do you feel like there's a better time to ask or quote?
You know, I've heard people say that they get better prices from one or from the other, or that they get the same prices from both. So I don't think that there is one answer. What I think is valuable is if you're going to come to the show, do your research ahead of time, which includes getting pricing information. Then at the show, you have more background information and a deeper understanding of the product to validate or to compare against what suppliers tell you at the show. And again, when you're getting the price information, also try to understand from the suppliers, hey, why is your price a little bit higher? Have you done something different on the components? Have you done something different to improve the quality? You know, what are you doing that causes the price to be higher? Or what are some of the things that we could do to lower the price? So then you get a better understanding of what drives the price. I remember many years ago for the LCD TVs when they were first coming out, there were 4 or 5 or 6 main components of the TV. There's the stand, the panel, the electronics, the case. And the more expensive TVs had all of those components coming from, I think, Korea and Japan. But as more of those components started being developed in China, you'd see that the TVs with, say, all 4 of those components developed in China had a much lower price. That's the kind of understanding you want to have about what's driving the cost of the product and where your options are to manage the cost. And then you can balance that with your quality requirements and whatever you're trying to hit for your target market.
Very, very, very cool. Yeah, exactly. Going back just to really owning your product and knowing your product, which is a critical part. So here's where it kind of gets interesting. Let's say that they found the right, or who they think is the right supplier, and they've made the order, and maybe the first order, let's say, was smooth, the second order was okay, but maybe later they're chatting on WeChat, which a lot of people do now, or they're chatting on Skype or email with their English speaking, you know, sales rep, and there's that question like, oh, we sorry to inform you, but the price has to come up, the costs have, you know, material costs have come up, or, you know, something else is changed and we need to change the price. Is, of course, this, you know, these things happen, and we've all been experiencing inflation and rising labor. So is what can the buyer really do at that point, you think?
Well, for the really large buyers, the big box retailers, you know, they might go back and just say no, and they're big enough that the supplier will just have to eat it because the supplier doesn't want to lose the business. For the smaller guys, the Amazon sellers, you know, a lot less leverage. So probably a greater chance that the smaller buyer will have to eat that increase, but still an opportunity to go out and talk to other suppliers and see what pricing they can offer. And have the conversation with the other suppliers also, hey, how are what's happening to prices? Do you see them going up or down? You can get a sense of what the reality of the market is to understand whether your supplier is in line with what's going on in the market or exceeding what's going on in the market, or your supplier may be raising prices, but raising prices less than their costs are going up, right? Which could be happening also. Either way, though, they're always going to be switching costs and moving from one supplier to another. So
exactly.
The challenge is to figure out, hey, this what I'm perceiving to be as a premium for the price increase that I'm paying to the supplier that I've worked with before, you know, how's that compared to the switching costs of moving to a new supplier? And
yep.
You know, there may be a lot of value to just staying with the new supplier, even if their costs have gone up. But those are kind of the two things to me. One, compared to the switching costs, it may be okay. And two, talk to other suppliers in the market, get additional quotes, and see what makes sense.
Yeah. So I think a lot of times, like you said, the smaller buyers or the Amazon buyers or, you know, these e-commerce business owners, they're always kind of feeling a little bit stuck. They read the books, the Chinese business books about building relationships and the fun keyword guanxi. And maybe they even went out to the factory and, you know, they've kind of invested a lot, you know, financially and IP, and especially if there's the mold, you know, this fixed cost up front. I think the mold is really the hardest part if they have to buy a mold up front. You know, do we want to discuss how strategies for switching, you know, maybe, and also I guess it really depends if there's a, if it's like a mold or you know, I guess that's their own design, but
yeah.
I don't know if you want to separate that or
no, that's a good question. Cause there are the, call it the gifts and home products, the entry level Amazon products like the garlic presses and the silicon spatulas and the silicon baking mats. Now the switching costs are pretty easy to move from one supplier to another supplier. The harder products are where it's your own design and you've gotten molds developed. I think some of the things that you want to think about upfront in that kind of process is, one, how much development work is the supplier going to do? Is the supplier going to do the design work? If so, are they going to give you the CAD diagrams? Is the supplier going to develop the bill of materials? If so, are they going to give you the bill of materials? Is the supplier going to identify sub-suppliers for each of the components in the bill of materials? If so, are you going to get a copy of that? Is the supplier going to develop the mold for you? If so, who owns the mold? You should pay for the mold up front and tell the supplier you own the mold. In an upfront conversation with the supplier, you can say, look, I need to own the intellectual property for all of these products. You know, I have legal responsibility for the product once it gets into the market. So I need to understand the product inside out. You know, as a result, if we're going to work together, I need to get the design files, for instance, so that safety engineers can take a look at it and make sure that there are no safety problems and that that covers my butt for legal liability issues. I need to get the, which is why I need the bill of materials and the sub-suppliers for the bill of materials and the, if you want to get this complicated, the inbound QC criteria for any of the components from the component suppliers. I think that the upfront conversation of you will give me all of this and getting that agreement upfront paves the way to, one, having that because you should anyway, but two, being prepared to switch in case you need to. You know, the worst case is to have to switch and then the supplier owns the mold, the supplier has all the design documents, the supplier knows all the component suppliers, and you don't know anything. So I think you really need to plan a lot of this in advance. And it's not that you're going to switch. It's that you're trying to run a business and mitigate the risks of the business. And that's the conversation to have with the supplier. Now, some suppliers are open to that and some suppliers aren't. Some suppliers recognize, hey, if we give you all the information, it's easier for you to switch. And some suppliers aren't comfortable with that. But if you have that conversation up front, you'll identify the supplier's comfort level and find a supplier that, you know, will give you the information that you want and need, which positions you to switch if you need to.
Got it. So here's where I think it's going to be an interesting conversation is maybe you've made a decision to switch or at least the intention to switch. You know, I think it's really tricky. I've had this in my own experience. So I could even share some of mine, but I think a lot of times I think is maybe you don't really want to tell. I guess if they have the mold, but normally I think you wouldn't tell the supplier you've switched, obviously, right? I mean, do you think?
No, you make a good point about the mold. I mean, if you're switching from a supplier, you may need to switch back. You may find the new supplier is even worse. So you probably want to maintain a good relationship, which to what you're saying means you may or may not tell them that you're switching. They won't know. You can tell them orders are slow and you're not ready to place a reorder. It, as you also said, though, if there's a single mold, that's a little bit harder. Now, not many people do this, but, and you know, Mike Bellamy, he's got a service to basically hold the molds on your behalf. So when the factory needs them for a production run, deliver the mold to the factory does what they need to do. Then when the factory is done, take the mold out. With that kind of service, you kind of solve the mold problem. Now, the issues, though, are one, the factory is always going to be like thinking, hey, are they taking the mold forever? But again, if you tell them up front, this is part of my standard process, I do it for all factories just to make sure that there are no excess production runs or anything like that. It's just a standard part of our business process. And you've done it a few times, then they recognize that it's normal for you. And then you have the mold outside of the factory when you need to switch. But again, that takes upfront planning. There are costs associated with moving the molds in and out of the factory. And there's also the possibility that the mold gets damaged when it's moved in and out of the factory. So you know, it's a question of how much risk mitigation do you want to take. But I think you're right. Be careful about what you tell the factory, because you may find your new factory is worse and you'll need to switch back to them.
Yep, exactly. And it's always good to keep your relationships as healthy as possible, you know. Plus, you know, technically, if they want to, you know, get messy, you know, it could get messy with, you know, they still know your product, even if you take the mold out. It's not like they don't know, maybe have experience already. So you want to try to, I would suggest, keep things friendly. I don't want to bring up a pop question, but I'm thinking, like, a lot of times people have to kind of play like whack-a-mole and they start seeing their own design product popping up on different, you know, directories online and on different platforms. That's, I guess, part of the upfront conversation again, right? Because sometimes I've heard from many listeners is, you know, the supplier kind of feels like they own it because they've been invested with making the product with you, and they might not even feel like there's anything wrong if maybe they're not competing with you in the US market or your home market or on the sales channels that you're on. You know, this is probably more about upfront discussions rather than later.
I think you're right. Also, upfront discussions. You know, it's interesting. I've talked to a lot of the suppliers at the trade shows, and I've asked them, how do you do product research? How do you figure out, you know, what new designs you want to bring to the market? And at the top of their list is from talking to our customers. So certainly they view, and if I was a supplier, I would too, conversations with customers as market research that helps them understand what to do next in the market. I think, like you said, you have to have an upfront conversation, like, this product is exclusive to me. But there's really two or three different problems that you're trying to minimize. One is the factory itself selling the same product to other people. And that one's a little bit easier, the upfront conversation with the factory. Another line that I heard, I think this was from Mike Bellamy also, was when you visit the factory, try to get the factory owner, the factory manager, in front of his other employees to say, I will not do X, right? We will only supply this to you. Because then he's got two issues. One, potential legal issues if you have an NNN or a supplier agreement. But two, his face issues with his employees. And that combination of issues would prevent him or that factory from making the product. But that may not be your biggest problem. Your other problems are the factory's cousin, you know, whether it's the sales guy, the owner, whoever, who's a different legal entity, you know, or somebody in the market that saw the product and just copied it independently. And those are even harder to prevent. Typically, you want to get to market fast, have a higher quality product. You may be able to put some IP protection in terms of patents around your product, but that requires lawyers and that requires money to enforce afterwards. But yeah, those are typical issues that folks face.
Sure. Another memory of mine in my early sourcing days, decade ago or so, but I remember people would, you know, have me help them source in China. And then I was even visiting the factory for them on a return order, and another sample would come in to that factory from the buyer directly because he was doing his own price shopping at the same time.
All right.
And, you know, I felt like a Chinese supplier kind of, because, you know, I kind of started getting the positioning of thinking like a Chinese supplier in a way where we always kind of blame the supplier for maybe these problems. But a lot of times the buyers have to kind of be a little bit more considerate, I think, of the suppliers, because they do spend time and money making quotations and samples. And if, you know, if they see you're so easy to maybe switch, and you're, you know, they were really confused. Honestly, I spent a couple of days at the factory and the sample came in while I was there from the buyer from the US, and he was talking to him directly. And they just felt like they didn't really trust this buyer, because obviously he's doesn't seem very loyal to many people. So I think price and maybe is important. I think, you know, and then actually the funny part about that story was, a few months later, he was complaining to me that his product was popping up on all these directories online, and he wanted to, you know, to try to blame me. But I said I was there when I didn't even tell him. I told him that when, you know, you're sending samples to everybody probably on the internet that you can find, you know, and then you're wondering why this is happening. So a lot of times the buyer has to be, I think a little bit more.
I think it's judicious.
Yeah.
No, you're absolutely right. As soon as you start sending CAD diagrams or samples to a lot of different suppliers, you're only going to end up working with one of them. Now, that was market research for all the other suppliers. And the other point that you make, which is interesting, is the buyers all talk to each other and they hear the horror stories about working with suppliers, but we also have the opportunity to talk to suppliers. And the suppliers are the same way. They all talk to each other and they all have horror stories about working with buyers. So both sides have horror stories about working with each other, probably about an equivalent number. So as you pointed out, I think it is important to be aware that the supplier is putting upfront investment into helping you get this product to market. And they do have to recover that cost somewhere. They can recover that cost either as a project fee upfront, or they need to recover it over the production run.
Yeah. So, I think people need to be a little bit less, blaming, or also sometimes these copies come from your overseas, your home market's competitors, like your US sellers are buying your product, sending it back to China. So, a lot of times it's all over the place. So, I think that's where you try to respect your supplier and do try to do whatever it takes to keep that relationship long-term.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. Another story that I heard, a baby product brand in the US had some really nice products. And one of the big box retailers, the buyer, the merchandiser at that big box retailer, took the product to suppliers in China and had suppliers manufacture that product. So in that case, it wasn't the China supplier, doing the knockoff. It was the merchandiser at the buyer at the big box retailer.
Yeah, exactly. So, I think people hopefully can get a little bit more different perspectives or point of views maybe by listening today on this section. Of course, there's bad suppliers that take advantage, of maybe naive new buyers. Sometimes they called it the white mice, coming into the maze. So I really liked your points so far about upfront, trying to be clear upfront and showing like you're an educated buyer and you have these procedures. But unfortunately, I think a lot of times, new buyers get into these relationships without that upfront kind of relationship. So I guess, is there a way to backtrack that? I guess you could just say we have new policies or maybe even have new team members or...
Those would be ways to do it. Yeah, new policies, new team members. I think as you said, it's easier to do it upfront, but or you could do it in conjunction with an order. Say, hey, here's the next order that we're placing. By the way, some of the things that we're doing have changed. Don't be afraid. We are placing our next order. So it kind of the putting a carrot along with the changes.
Yeah, it's true. And I even talked to a recent friend that sold his FBA listing to a buyer, and I asked him about the transferring of the list, the supplier, right? Because that's a little bit delicate. Is how do you switch over the relationship? But the way he told me he did it was he just said that this is like a new person in the company, didn't explain the buying or selling of the business or the listing, and it was smooth from there. But it's similar type of a switching. So maybe you could also introduce someone new in your company to the buyer or to the supplier is another idea.
Sure.
But yeah, I guess a lot of people are always afraid, to preventing your factory or your old supplier to become your competitor. I'm sure there's tons of horror stories, but other ways to prevent that? I mean, if it does happen, what?
Well, I guess you want to start creating moats around your product. Patents can be a moat. But there are other moats also. You could be doing better advertising. You could be better managing your reviews. You could have a better listing on Amazon. You could have better marketing. So you want to think about what are you doing that the factory is going to have difficulty doing, right? So a lot of folks do the paid advertising on Amazon. I'm not sure that the China suppliers do that as much. They're so focused on price that they may not want to invest in the advertising. Or they may not do the customer service. And without doing the customer service, they may not get the higher ratings on Amazon. And without the higher ratings, you won't get the same sales volume. Without that sales volume, you won't rank as high in the search results. So I think that they're subject to what the product is. There are a fair number of things that you can do, say, outside the product to protect yourself. Now, within the product, if it's a more complicated product, what some people will do is get components made in different places and then have yet another party assemble the product so that no individual factory knows the full product and only the assembler, which could be a Western-owned company, knows the final product and protect a little bit of the knowledge that way.
Yeah, that's always a good one.
So there are a fair number of steps.
Yeah, no, this is really great, Pete. Thanks again for coming on. I think I've picked your brain enough, and I think this really is going to be a great episode for a long time for listeners. So another one for serious buyers and Amazon sellers. You know, we mentioned earlier you're going to have your second now Smart China Sourcing Summit at the trade show in October. Do you want to share a little bit about it?
Sure. Yeah, that's going to be October 17th through the 19th, co-located with our Mobile Electronics and Gifts and Home Show in Hong Kong. The show itself is the 18th through the 21st. So it overlaps the show. We've got some really exciting speakers. I've got Anchor's going to speak. They're going to talk about going from zero to 300 million. They're nice. Basically a private label company, brand that's grown quite well. We have a couple ex-Amazon speakers. We have Will Turland will be coming back and speaking. We'll be talking about a number of case studies, selling on Europe, create UC checklists, you know, a bunch of great topics on both sourcing and selling. So I'm really excited about the lineup of folks we have. Oh, and we're going to have you running a panel, and we're still finalizing what we're going to be covering, but really covering things that folks in China have learned about working with suppliers that they would love to have known when they were outside of China, like a lot of the folks, the Amazon sellers sourcing from China. So that should be exciting.
Yeah.
Hey, I had one other note though from my notes here.
Sure.
For this call. We were talking about.
Oh, go ahead.
We were talking a lot about costs, and a lot of people focus on the product price from the supplier when they look at the cost equation. When you start looking though at your full costs, not just your landed costs, but all your costs minus your revenue, you see that there are a lot of other components that are pretty big. So there are other ways to improve margin besides or beyond negotiating down the product price. So for instance, ocean shipping versus air shipping, depending on the product, can make a substantial difference on unit pricing. The size of your order can make a medium difference on pricing. Taking action to reduce return rates, whether that's improving product quality, improving the description, improving the photos, can definitely have an impact on profitability and margin. And also having good quality product, like we talked about before, to get better reviews and better conversion rates so that you show up higher in the Amazon search results because your sales velocity is higher, may have a bigger impact on profitability than squeezing out another few pennies from the supplier's price.
It is true, right? I think that's a lot of times for Westerners in China, we sometimes blame ourselves. I'm not sure about overseas buyers too, but we get so hung up on price versus selling more or, you know, increasing price or increasing more, you know, other, you know, I think a lot of times we focus too much on pushing the price down than actually selling more, marketing more, you know. So yeah, I totally agree with you. You know, a lot of times we all get hung up on how much lower can we get on the product, but, I think it's true. I think our skill as sellers and Westerners, a lot of times is our marketing and our sales and our knowledge of the whole market, you know, our target market. So yeah, I like that too. And another one I just thought of was also, where is a supplier located? I've had issues where I bought some from Ningbo, FOB Ningbo. A lot of times I know a lot of buyers are buying from Ningbo or Zhejiang province. And then sometimes, you know, of course, down in the south in Guangdong. But if you have some up there and some down here, you can't really consolidate shipments, or you're going to have a little bit more complex or expensive supply chain. Or even if you want to buy from maybe Vietnam or Southeast Asia, then you still might have some suppliers in China. And then, so also I think similar to what you were saying is the complexity of your supplier network maybe.
No, those are definitely good points to add into looking at your supply chain costs and how you're managing your supply chain and whether you can do that in a way that becomes more efficient. Absolutely. To help improve profitability.
Great, Pete. Well, thanks again for always hey, Mike, bringing great value.
Yeah, and, great being on. Appreciate it.
Sure. So that's
Thank you.
That's a wrap. Thank you, Pete, again for delivering superb value. I hope everybody enjoyed that one. I was talking to him about preparing for the show. We just wanted to make sure that this was something valuable and maybe you hadn't heard of online. So if you want to maybe give your tips and strategies of what you're doing, it'd be really awesome at globalfromasia.com/episode138. I know you guys are all hanging on your iTunes and, you know, riding your bicycles and boats like I do with podcasts. But if you could maybe spend some time and share with others, that'd be amazing. So I also hope to catch some of you guys during this busy October trade show season. I know some people have been asking about all these different events they're going to. So again, I'm going to be presenting at the Smart China Sourcing Summit there with Pete, and the links are in the show notes. I'm also going to be, you know, a part of the enterchina.co meetup in Guangzhou. I'm a part of that community, so I'm excited to be there. Chris Davey, a friend, previous guest, and a speaker at different summits I've done, is hosting his Amazon FBA meetups as well in Guangzhou. And he's got two of them already starting to promote, and they're going to be bigger and better than ever. I'll put those links to the meetups on the show notes as well. So again, there's just tons of stuff linked there, and also the Dynamite Circle events, which are for members only. But if you want to check out all that different stuff, it's a lot. It's globalfromasia.com/episode138. You know, we're in September almost now, so October's almost here. And it seems like to have the best effect, you got to start planning earlier. So I'm starting to plan things earlier and earlier. Maybe it's getting old or the kids stuff. But I refreshed my review checker thingy, and we have an iTunes review. So it's awesome. Karsten, who was on our show as well, talking about Thailand companies set up a couple of weeks ago, he left an amazing review. I'll read it right now. He says, "A knowledgeable, humble host spills the beans of Hong Kong. 5 stars. And from Thailand on August 9th. Michael knows what he's talking about. His expertise on Hong Kong is only matched by his humbleness about it. What he knows, he shares, and what he doesn't, he's honest about. It makes his advice and voice thoughts a lot more dependable than others whose main objective is to only appear knowledgeable, even at the cost of authenticity or potential misinformation. If you're thinking about doing business in Hong Kong or other places in the region, his podcast is a great place to get started." Thank you, Karsten. Much appreciated. And everyone else, you are more than welcome to leave a review. I know some friends and listeners have already left reviews. We're up to 34, it says. And you can go to globalfromasia.com/iTunes and then click, they'll go to iTunes page, and there's a ratings and reviews tab, and you can just go ahead and leave a review. So that's it for this week. I'm heading up to Shanghai tomorrow, Wednesday, for about a week, speaking about WeChat cross-border business. So if you guys are in Shanghai, hit me up. It'll be a really fast, less than a week. But and of course, we've got great guests. We're recording there, and great guests coming up on future shows. Tons of amazing content. Thanks for all your support. Thanks for listening all the way to the end of this thing. And my intro and outros have been a little bit longer. I hope that's okay for you. And enjoy your week. Success to you in your global business. Cheers.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.